Hello and welcome to another episode of the Albion Roy on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com on DAB. And of course, on our podcast, I'm A.D. Packham and we are transmitting thanks to the aid of science and oldfootballshirts.com. Well, since we last talked, last Sunday we succumbed to a late Wayne Rooney penalty allowing Everton to snatch a point at the Amex. Baron Kyle and Sam Baldock made their comeback from injury in the under-23's 2-2 draw with Blackburn. We will not be live on TV in December, meaning we'll have a game at home on a Saturday, kicking off at 3 o'clock. And last night, we went to London and we came home ecstatic after a brilliant performance in our 3-0 victory at the Olympic Stadium. Joining me today is, of course, Alan Wes, and we're delighted to welcome back the perennial bridesmaid. It is Andy Bass. And that's this week's Albion Rule, where, unlike other media outlets, we will definitely be talking about Brighton and Hove Albion Football Club. Hello, Al. You all right?
Hello, darling. How are you?
I'm well.
Soaked, actually. I just got come in from Brighton Station, where the trains were a mess. It was sunny when I left Lancing earlier today, and now it's throwing its backside off down here.
It's the gods. They're unhappy with our performance last night.
It's a wet sham.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And how are you, Andy? I can't see you, actually. Are you there?
I am here. Yes, I'm very well. Thank you very much. Still basking in the glow of that wonderful win last night.
It was a fantastic. We're obviously going to talk about the game in a minute, but I mean, going to the Olympic Stadium, which is massive.
It's traumatic, isn't it?
And it was, West Ham fans leaving after 75 minutes disgruntled. I mean, next to us, where we were, they were gone.
I love the way that the London Stadium is actually designed with so many tombstones. I mean, it's quite fitting for Slaven Bilic's career at West Ham, isn't it?
Well, he's still there at the time of recording.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it was a great win, and it was lovely to see ourselves in 10th position going into today's games on a Saturday. But, again, another game on a Friday night, Andy.
Another game on a Friday night. I don't mind them if they're home games, but I was a bit miffed that this one was going to be on a Friday, sort of shortening the day a little bit.
You took full advantage.
I did end up making the day of it, but I didn't really have a chance to like walk around the Olympic Park.
Yeah, I would have liked to have done
that and had a look. But
you ensconced yourself in the hostelries around London Bridge, didn't you?
Yes, we did.
For a change,
we hit the usual haunts. But
no, we didn't, because we didn't go to the only pub in London.
That's not a usual haunt anymore, is it?
No, that's been retired.
It has, and as our good friend Vicky said, it smells of liquid discharge, shall we say. The Wheatsheaf is such a nicer player, a much nicer place, isn't it?
Yes.
Even though, and we do have to tell the story to, it was one of those you had to be there, but we have to tell the story to our listener of some fat Palace person turning up in the pub, looking slightly dishevelled, looked like his underpants were hanging out of his flies.
Were you looking in a mirror by any chance? Because, I mean, you're describing yourself here.
My flies are always done up, thank you, even when they shouldn't be. I did actually sort of remark to my learned friends about whether he might have wet himself, and then he wanted to kick off, and then he was singing to himself, and then it was like a pinball. The bloke was just bumping around every single chair, shouting and singing, "We've scored a goal." Hashtag funny.
Yeah, that was interesting. It was impressive to be in that state by about 5 o'clock on
Absolutely.
Friday afternoon.
Well, I think if I was a Palace fan, I'd think I wouldn't live in that state in perpetuity.
Well, there, of course, you are talking about another London team. And later on in the show, we've asked you for your top memories of trips,
London,
away games,
yeah,
in London. So we'll be discussing those a little bit later on. But first, we have got to talk about, it seems a lifetime ago now, last Sunday at the Amex. And Everton came. It was one of the games we were all looking forward to, because we hadn't played them since 1983, the last time we were in this division. And it was
they've had quite a history since then. In all that time, I mean, they won the league twice. They won the Cup Winners' Cup. They probably would have won the European Cup, but for Heysel intervening. I mean, you know, it's a funny thing that, you know, you think of Everton, and I think of the great, and it was a truly great Everton side of the mid 80s, and how their star has fallen. They've had numerous relegation battles since. They made a poor start to the season, and I think all of us just really fancied it.
But Andy, it was a game that was moved to a 1 o'clock kicker, 1:30 kickoff on a Sunday afternoon, which isn't great for the travelling Everton fans. And this was because the game was being shown in India. Now we've had a moan about this, but I mean there has been positives about that, hasn't there?
Well, I mean, I say fair play. I think all games should be moved for the benefit of
someone else
of broadcasting in other time zones. Absolutely, utterly ridiculous thing, but. But funny you should mention that, because we seem to have picked up we found an Indian follower on Twitter.
Sai, who's
now a newfound supporter of Brighton and Hove Albion, and was very enthusiastic about yesterday's win. Yeah. So he'd have been watching the game on TV in India. So maybe the brand is growing slowly but surely.
Two people in a city of 8.5 million. I mean, Acorns, admittedly.
It's a start.
Absolutely.
It's a start. I mean, we're not regarded as a big name by the outside football world. And
the longest.
Yeah, and just, so anything we can do to raise the profile is pretty good. But to move a fixture for that reason is just utterly ridiculous. So yeah. I'm glad we've been given December off.
Mm. Yes.
Okay, well, the game itself, there was three changes to the team, with Marcus Suttner coming back in for Gaetan Bong, and Knockhart was in for Escuedo, and Glenn Murray returned at the expense of Izzy Brown. There were a few chances in the first half, and...
You're right, it does seem like a lifetime ago. I haven't caught up on the highlights, and I'm thinking, that was a long time ago.
Yeah. There was one thing that did stand out. Now, we were talking about this briefly yesterday, weren't we, but... about who is the most decorated player to ever played at the Amex.
Yeah.
And we suspect it was one that was playing there last Sunday, and he was roundly booed.
Yeah, it's a funny one, that, isn't it? I mean, it's... How does one revere one's heroes? Do you think of him as someone who 100 plus caps, all time leading goal scorer, or do you actually take it for his off field stuff? You might turn the mics down here just in case the lawyers are listening. But some of his behaviour off field doesn't actually mark him out as a role model. I don't think that's why he's being booed. I think people were booing him just for him to be petulant. I think actually, to be honest, I think he would have been less worried about being booed than more like Shane Duffy trying to swap shorts with him during the game, because he took him out more than one occasion.
Oh, there was a brilliant sliding tackle where Rooney's first touch was appalling, and Duffy just slid in, didn't he? It was a beautiful moment.
Well, he was just so irritated all the time, and the referee wasn't, considering how many free kicks the referee gave Everton last week. He sort of didn't really like giving Rooney too many.
Yeah.
He was frustrated on more than one occasion. That was good to see.
Yes, absolutely.
I actually thought Rooney did all right.
I thought
he was one of the more enterprising players.
But I mean, we do need to talk about the referee last week. Now it's been pretty good this year. I hadn't really had a moan about the referees so far.
No,
this season.
No, and if we fast forward to last night's game, he was decent as
well. But I mean, and Michael Oliver is one of the better ones, to be fair. And we had him for the Man City game.
He had one of his chokers on Sunday. I can't help feeling, I don't know, it's probably just years of watching Match of the Day when we haven't been on it and therefore not part of it.
I don't think we're on it this week, Al.
Well, we'll be on MOTT 2, won't we?
No, we weren't. We were not on that show.
Oh, I see.
Everton were on the show, not on that show.
Okay, but anyway, my point is that you're used to the whole... I mean, it's just this people who don't like football. The diving, the cheating, the rolling around, the grizzling, the whole thing. And there was so many aspects of that with Everton. That's not to say that Brighton don't do it, but it seemed to be the tour de force of Everton. That, you know, the little niggles, down they go, the rolling around, banging the turf, that kind of thing. It's... and I kind of have a feeling that Michael Oliver was falling a bit too much for it. But in the great scheme of things, like you say, one, I think he's considered one of the better refs. Two, I think that the referees that we've had this season have basically been pretty good. Mm. I think basically because the football's been a lot better. You know, we're actually playing at a higher level with a lot higher, a lot more skill to it. And so there's fewer incidents for a referee to take charge of. But I think then three, without actually sorry Andy saying anything, why should we be talking about refs unless they were honkingly bad?
Well, you mean like the one we were watching at Worthing last Saturday?
I thought it was all right.
Andy?
Thought he had a poor game.
just to point out here, what it was we, because we obviously had Saturday off, there's a few of us went over to watch Worthing against the Met Police.
And their away kit isn't actually Riot Gear, strangely.
No, it's not.
Who'd have thought?
No, it's a good game. 3-3 you know, Adam Hinshaw with the Worthing manager sent off, 2 penalties. All that was missing was a dog on the pitch, and we'd have, you know, had the full works. But I think it's just a really good example of, you know, if you get a chance to watch some non-league football, you actually do get, you know, you can usually catch a good game.
It was great fun. But yeah, back to Michael Oliver then. I mean, I was desperately trying to give him the benefit of the doubt throughout the whole game, but...
It was irritating.
Watching the highlights that they didn't show on Match of the Day. So I've got a major beer in my bonnet about this, by the way. You might have noticed.
No, really.
But it's the fact is, there were 2 teams playing against...
Each other.
Brighton Hove Albion against Everton Football Club. Yes, that's 2 teams, BBC. Not just Everton. You can talk about them as well. That's fine. But to completely ignore us, including the goal, and... the fact that we had 3 very, very big penalty shouts in that game. And did they show them? Did they hell?
Have you ever heard of the phrase under the radar? I mean, I'm more than happy to be under the radar.
Yeah, no, but when you've... I mean, I hadn't seen... I had to check up the Seagulls player highlights and then to see whether it was actually a penalty or not. In my opinion, it was. But we'll come to that in a minute.
Andy, I think AD wants you to talk about Michael Oliver, or do you think we've covered it?
Oh, I think we covered it. Okay, I'll tell you what, though. I mean, as soon as we're talking about Everton, the free kicks, I thought they're 17. Terrible. Yeah. Just diving all the time. He spent more time on the ground.
Calvert-Lewin, isn't it?
I don't know what his name was. Useless.
So does Shane Duffy when he's clearing. I mean, his torpedo dives are just getting to be legendary now.
But it was another game for that one person, that our one central defender, Duncan Duffy.
the gestalt entity. They are... I'll tell you what, I've waffled already so much in this show. Andy, give us your 8-9 games into the season
appraisal.
Appraisal, thank you. Not pricey. Appraisal of the Duncan Duffy beast.
I would say show me a better centre-half pairing in the Premier League. You can't. They're the best two.
Don't call me that.
quite frankly, they're just a brick wall. Absolutely superb, not only in terms of just like the good old fashioned art of defending, which is just getting in a flipping way of the ball, which is great. I love that they put their bodies on the line with every challenge. I've not seen other defenders block the way that they do, and they really make sure it stays blocked.
It does take a long time to get round them as well, doesn't it?
It does, yeah, because they are physically both imposing. They make that challenge for the opposition, but also they can play as well. I mean, you know, Dunk is so good at bringing the ball out. I just think he's a complete centre half. He needs to get in that England squad.
Ian Wright on 5 Live this week described him as he reminds him of a lot of Martin Keown.
Well, he's not that ugly.
Well, like a better looking version, yeah. A slightly bigger version. But he's a good footballer. And Duffy's a little bit more on the sort of rough and ready side, but he's really aware of what's going on around him, and it's very interesting. I did have a little listen to the commentary from the BBC on last night's game, and they were describing how quickly Duffy was getting into his blocks, and like they just see the game really well.
And that is an important point that they can read the game. They
really
know what's happening.
They're actually pretty intelligent footballers, and for my money. They're the two best centre halves in the
as a Premier, pairing
as a pairing
as individuals. Go on.
As individuals, I'd say Dunk is definitely one of the best English ones in there, and Duffy. I think both of them could walk into any side in the Premier League.
Do you think that Lewis Dunk has got a good chance of going to the World Cup?
No.
Yes.
No, I think Gareth Southgate is. Let's put it this way: the one time that we're going to get this idea at all is the next set of internationals, where we're playing, admittedly, Brazil and Germany, two of the better sides in the world. I mean, it's not as though we're going to be playing, Poland and the North Pole or something like that.
On a Sunday afternoon,
that kind of thing. If Dunk has got any, or rather, if Southgate's got any ideas or any plans or intentions for Dunk to go to the World Cup, I suspect that's the opportunity he'll get to pick that squad. In other words, just having a look at someone else. Personally, I suspect that Southgate will be wanting to zero in on his 22.
Dunk is better than Stones.
It's a matter of opinion. There's also the fact is that don't forget that the defenders that are there are actually relatively settled in being there. Don't forget Dunk has only played 9 games in the Premier League. He's not experienced yet. He's done well, very well against the people he's played against.
He looks like he's played 90 games in the Premier League.
He does look, oh, don't get me wrong, he looks like he's settled in quite handsomely. But that relative inexperience, although admittedly Michael Keane hadn't spent sort of too long in the Premier League before he got his call up, I understand the point. I'm just not convinced. What I'd still say is, I don't know. I mean, it could be that Southgate does take a punt, but I would suspect that we'll have another one of our spectacular failures in Russia next summer. Southgate will be given the Spanish Archer. Someone else will come in. Fresh ideas, fresh legs. That's when Dunk comes in. Could be wrong. He might go to Russia. I would say that if I was a betting man, which I ain't, but if I am, he's not going to Russia.
Okay. I think he's got a good chance, personally.
He's got a good chance. I just don't think it will happen.
I think he is now being talked about. I mean, you're talking about being under the radar. Lewis is actually he's poked his head above the parapet. Well,
the thing is, what he's got is alongside a fella who is already in international bracket, who might yet still go to the World Cup. Let's put it this way, if his team goes there, he's going there. So, you know, if Dunk and Duffy are being talking about in the same breath, then yes, it's going to be assumed that Dunk's star is going to rise too. Because, like I say, all of us who watched Ireland against Wales, and you were convinced that Duffy had gained a new double-barreled name, i.e. Duffy Clears. And that was, you know, and he got a lot of credit for it, and is a hero in Ireland, and therefore I think that it's possible that, weirdly enough, Dunk's star will rise on the back of Duffy's.
That is possible, because Duffy's definitely getting the column inches at
absolutely,
the moment.
Absolutely, yeah.
For the right reasons.
#snigger.
Okay, well, we're gonna talk about last night in a minute, but we've got to talk about Jose Escuerdo from last Sunday, and his introduction certainly changed the game.
That's another impact sub, isn't it? We've got so many impact subs. It's those that start that worry me more. You know, Izquierdo started against Arsenal. He scored a worldie against West Ham, but
we'll talk about that in a minute.
Yeah, of course.
We're talking about Sunday first.
Of course, yeah. I mean, he came on and he livened the place.
Andy?
Absolutely electrified the place when he came on, and it was just what we needed.
Shaza Kazenga.
Yeah, Shaza.
It was his first appearance at the Amex as well.
Yeah, it was. He definitely wanted to impress. I think he was very pleased to get his opportunity, and he took it. He was running at them from the off. Hit Everton as soon as he came on, and definitely caused some problems, because we were playing pretty well at that stage, but you kind of felt that maybe we were running out of ideas a little bit. And then he just comes on, gives us fresh injection. Suddenly the energy is flowing through that forward unit, and
he lifted the whole place as well. The atmosphere wasn't flat, but it was
quite the library that the Emirates was.
I thought the atmosphere last week was tremendous. Yes. I think the atmosphere,
especially when we scored, that was a noise.
It was.
Well, let's talk about that now, because it was a funny old game for Bruno, because he created the goal initially. It was his 1-2 with Gross, and he skipped past the defender. Who was the defender?
Literally skipped past him. I mean,
was that Leighton Baines? Was it
before? Wasn't Baines.
He got subbed, did he? Was he subbed?
No, Baines. Baines was the second player. He went past.
Right. it was brilliant. I've seen it, like, obviously several times, but he dances past him. It is just brilliant footwork.
And he put it on a plate for Escuerdo, but his shot was blocked, and Gross keeps the move alive, and Knockout fires home his first goal of the season.
Fantastic work by Gross again, and he was on that ball in a flash.
Another assist.
He just
sloppy defending from Everton
it was a bit sort of Keystone Cops defending, but he was just in there straight away. He was ready for it. He was quicker to the ball. And I just think some of these players are really starting to see the game really well. And Gross, he's just always there when we score. You know, he's just loitering with intent at every opportunity.
I'll tell you what's indicative of another thing. Now, the number of teams we've played in the Premier League who when they go forward, they can keep the ball well, they keep the ball moving, and, you know, sometimes difficult to shake off and what have you. But the number of teams, all right, we play, what, 9? I would say I can think of 3, maybe 4, whose defences are so leaky. And I'm thinking the Everton one, that, you know, that they were disappointed in that. The Newcastle one, their defending was shocking for our goal. West Brom they were nowhere for a couple of the goals. There are teams there who's, you know, like I say, going forward look reasonable, but they've almost like they've forgotten how to defend. Whereas with us, everything is built around the defence.
Yeah.
You know,
and the art of proper defending, yes, which is like getting your tackles in, getting your blocks in, getting your headers.
What we don't do is play a high pressure. We don't play a high pressure one. We actually play this zonal thing that actually makes us difficult to go through.
Do you think that the student's game plan, though? I mean,
absolutely.
Because obviously we do have the personnel to play on the front foot. It's just that we don't often.
Yeah.
Well, this is it. I mean, when you spend that amount of time, I mean, what you have to do is attack and defend as a unit. So it's great. I mean, again, we're back to last night. The number of times the ball was just cleared, hoofed up the pitch. There's Murray. And you think, okay, reasonable player. But if he's not got the players that are with him who've moved forward 10 yards to support him, the ball's going to come straight back again. So it's not just defending as a, we're difficult to break down. It's about defending as, right, we've got the ball. Now let's make sure that the first part of his defence is to keep the ball.
Okay. Well, Izzy Brown had a chance to make it two, which Pickford made a fantastic save from.
Yep.
And then the Everton penalty. Discuss.
Well, nailed on, I'm afraid. Yeah, I mean, it's part of the thing that they're doing here is that you know, Bruno's going for the block and what have you. Yes, if he had just sort of stood still, highly probable that the penalty wouldn't have been given, even though he did block his man off. You stick your arm up, you're asking for trouble. And bearing in mind that Bruno is about the width of a goalpost, I reckon his elbows must be as sharp as a blade.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to give that in the last minute, though, Andy, you've got to give it in the first minute, right?
Well, I suppose so. I mean, I have to say, I mean, like last Sunday, I was convinced it was not a penalty.
No, really?
You know, it's somewhat tongue in cheek, given that it was really only me that thought that. I mean, I still think it was a soft penalty, but I think you're right. I think Bruno, I mean, the referee was in a perfect position to see it. Any player that raises his arm risks sanction by the referee, and really Bruno should have thought a little bit more before he did it. I thought he was perfectly entitled to step in to Lewin, who basically just run into him.
Yeah.
But the referee was there, the arm was up.
It was above the horizontal as well,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah. Okay. And I think that is why it was given. So really, Bruno, you've got to just cut that out.
Yeah, I mean, he got a yellow card, weirdly enough, but if the referee had seen it and with an elbow up, that, you know,
yeah, you're risking
we'd be
it.
Screaming for red, wouldn't
you're,
we?
You're risking it.
Yeah.
You are running
silly
a risk.
Boy.
Okay, well, Rooney steps up and rescued a point for the Toffees.
And again, the headlines are all about Everton, you know, Rooney saves Everton. Hello, we're here.
It is frustrating. It is really frustrating because, I mean, another podcast that I listen to, another media outlets, it was certainly all about Everton and whether Koeman's going to be in with a job. Not a case of, like, are penalty shouts the one on Lewis? What's his name? Jagielka saved in the first half from Lewis Dunk's shot when he put, and there was the tackle on Gross where he was pushed in the box. Again, that was another penalty. They didn't even bother to show that on Match of the Day, but on this, if you look at the highlights of the Seagulls play, it quite clearly is a penalty. So. But we'll leave that one there, and you are listening
feel
to
better now.
Yeah, no, not really. But you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. We are brought to you, of course, in association with OldFootballShirts.com. I'm just going to pass this over to Andrew Bass.
Oh. Right, describe if you could.
Okay, what we've got here is a sort of red and white striped shirt. I mean, it looks like it's just been spray painted.
Right.
Very interesting. Fans for Diversity, big logo in the middle.
Oh, right, okay.
It's pretty easy to guess who this is because it says Altrincham FC on the crest.
Phil, your photoshopping skills getting worse, mate.
But yeah, very nice. Yeah, I mean, an unusual sort of graffiti style spray paint.
This is a recent stripes. Thing, then, isn't it? It's something they had no more than 2 weeks ago.
Close, yeah, yeah.
Grand okay. Old non-league club, Altrincham.
Okay, well, this is what Uncle Phil has to say about this one. He says, "Here is your shirt of the week. This is a special edition home shirt of Altrincham FC of the Evo Stick Northern Premier League, nicknamed the Robins and commonly renowned as Alti." Okay. The club was founded as Rigby Memorial Club in 1891. They merged with a local club, Grappiers, and were renamed Broadheath in 1893, before coming Altrincham in 1903. They play at the 6,085 capacity Moss Lane Stadium. This is a match-worn shirt and is a special design made and used just once in their league game against Rushall Olympic on the 7th of October 2017. So you're right, yeah, very recently. The game was a very important match day for Altrincham, who were selected as one of the only four clubs nationally to be promoted and funded by Fans for Diversity, an organisation supported by Kick It Out and the Football Supporters Federation to showcase inclusion and diversity at the club and the wider community. Before and after the match, Altrincham demonstrated the work they've been doing to improve the match day experience in general for all the people, irrespective of age, ethnicity, ability, background, gender or religious belief. All part of Altrincham's journey to become the most inclusive and diverse non-league club in England. After the game, the shirts were auctioned off and the proceeds donated to Prostate Cancer UK. Altrincham won the game 4-0 and are sitting high in the league and hoping for promotion.
Splendid. So, yeah. Good stuff. Well,
that was so it is. And yeah. I mean, that leads us neatly. And we're not going to go in depth on this one, but we do need to. I mean, we're talking about the Kick It Out campaign and the various things that have been going on. There's been some big news this week in regards to the independent committee and into the Ennio Luco saga. Is the FA fit for purpose, is the question?
Well, we've had this question before. I think that there's various aspects of the FA that are. I mean, and the diversity programmes and the inclusion programmes, you know, those that take part in it, even those that are suspicious of the FA hierarchy, say that these are very, very good programmes and they are worth what they do. However, you know, I watched the, you know, because as a dullard, I watched the four people questioned by the Common Select Committee after having interviewed Ennio Luco and Leanne Sanderson. And they were an absolute shambles. I think the FA does obviously serve a purpose. It needs to. But the people at the top of the game, I can't help feeling it's just snouts in the trough for them at times.
Well, I mean, how do you deal with it, though, Andy? I mean, if they fall on their sword, then they're only going to be replaced by other equally similar people from the same sort of background. So surely education of them and get them to actually try and do something
they
about
need
this.
They just need to get better at finding competent people. I mean, there just seems to be a sense of embarrassment amongst FA bigwigs, and I think Al's right to differentiate between the programmes that are run at a grassroots level and the people at the top table at the FA. But there just seems to be a sense that these people are just embarrassed the moment you mention any sort of racism issues, any kind of homophobia issues, any kind of, you know, anything to do in that.
Anything that deviates from the norm.
And yeah, and it's just that they just seem very uncomfortable with it. They just seem to be embarrassed. They don't like to acknowledge its existence in an almost kind of like, you know, 1970s way. It's like they just kind of want it to go away and please stop talking to us about this
stuff. Well, the whole thing about the Aluko and Sanderson saga is it seems to be all about sort of protecting Mark Sampson. You know, yeah. Obviously women's football at the international level is in the ascendance, irrespective of the way they crashed out the European Championships. It is in the ascendance and they don't want to rock that boat. On that level, you can understand it. However, if Mark Sampson has an issue with women playing, you know, under him and he's making inappropriate comments, then you have to deal with them. Yes, it does mean they might have to take a step back in order that they go forward. But if they have to get rid of a problem that's actually festering within the game, then do it. Whatever you do, don't do this whole thing of, right, okay, here's our team, this is what we're going to do, and everything is this bubble that you've got to protect. No, you've got to do what's right. Not just because, you know, football is a reflection of society and society has its place. You know, it's very important within football. You know, we've got all these various issues. We talk about, you know, football did actually really, really well in tackling racism across society. It's doing less well with tackling homophobia across society. Is that a malaise that the FA hierarchy have now, or is it just the fact that some people still don't consider homophobia to be an issue? But the point is that the FA is not taking the lead that it should do. It's actually assigning itself to various other groups, like you say, like Show Racism, the Red Card, like Kick It Out, like Football v Homophobia and what have you. But these are programmes that the FA should be screaming at the highest, because they have, if footballers are supposed to be a role model, then the FA are supposed to be the role models for the footballers. Okay. I would say.
Okay, well, we'll leave that one now. I mean, it's a topic. It's just going to run and run and run, isn't it? And
we could end up being the Albion bore. It's important.
I mean, the FA, they've still got this reputation of being...
Well, it's a Buffed and Tufted, isn't it?
Stuffed shirts. And I think that maybe getting some younger people in at the top, or maybe not. People who've actually played the game, who know how football should be run.
One thinks of the likes of, I know he wants to go into management very soon, but one thinks of the likes of Liam Rossini as actually being a good guiding light.
I really don't see him being a football administrator.
No, I can't, but you know, it's the likes of him that people should turn to.
Yeah, but yeah, he certainly would make a lot more sense than they
Absolutely.
Do. Okay, well, did you do anything last night, Eddie?
Nope. I went to a football match.
Did you see the football match?
I did. It was a long way in the distance, but apparently it was taking place somewhere in front of me. So,
I came prepared, mate.
We scoffed at your binoculars, Al, but you know, actually, well done getting them past the security.
Why did you even show them to me? Yeah, good idea, mate.
But I went to see Usain Bolt, and I saw a bolt from the blue. But it was, or in this case, the yellow. But
Hashtag Partridge.
Okay. Well, there was some changes to the team that drew with Everton, and it appears that Guy Sembong is the away left back. Andy,
I think this Houghton is picking teams for opposition. I think against Arsenal, he was worried about. The pace on that side of the pitch, and he was clearly concerned about Antonio, who's the major threat for West Ham going forward.
Yeah, he was a constant pain,
and so he went with Bong and Izquierdo on that side to keep the pace. That's for us to have the pace on that side to counter anything going down that side, and it worked. I mean, you know, with that sort of getting ahead of myself, I mean, I was struggling to think of a single player to single out last night as man of the match, and I gave my, you know, I would say Chris Houghton, because I just thought he just absolutely out-coached the opposition brilliantly last night. It was just a perfectly executed game plan. I felt comfortable throughout the entire match.
Yeah. And the other big news was the fact that Shane Duffy was fit.
Yes, I mean, we kind of half expected. I mean, like, a groin strain for Shane Duffy is a bit like sort of like the rest of us stubbing our toe a little bit, isn't it? Mm. I mean, you know, the fact that he walked off in the game against Everton rather than, because at the time I actually thought it was a head injury, in which case there's no way that he'd actually be affected by that. But he, with a groin, it's not as though he hobbled off. It's not as, yeah, I mean, they put his groins back together and off he went. And you never know that there was an issue. You know, by the way he played.
Mm. And also, Izquierdo came in for Solly March. Now, there was... the warning signs were there for West Ham, that we weren't there just to make up the numbers. And we had... There was an early opportunity for Jose Izquierdo, who... I think he did actually try and get the ball out of the stadium.
Yes.
Yeah,
that would take some doing.
And he nearly did it.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, it was a perfectly executed... Well,
it was
perfectly
a nice
executed
move.
Corner, in as much as West Ham just didn't pick him up at all. And even when you saw the ball trundling towards him, no one came to close him down. Mm. But, you know, it's that thing of leaning back and, you know, slightly on... Well, totally on the turn and everything like that. And, wow, I mean, that was... He skied that. I mean, you know, Johnny Wilkinson would have been pleased with that.
Yeah. But it was...
I believe I signalled the...
Yeah, the old 1 point for the... Yeah.
But that does seem to be, obviously not trying to clear the stadium being the point, it does seem to be his signature move, isn't it?
What, skying it?
Which is, well, no, the cut inside and trying to put it in the top corner.
Yeah, he does like that. I mean, he tried it like within like a minute of coming on at Watford, where it actually wasn't that too far away.
No.
Well, we do know that he does possess a decent pair of shooting boots, just not on that occasion. I mean, it's... As a chance, it was a good chance. As for the execution, move on to your next point.
Yeah, okay. Well, none of the officials were Tory MPs. That's another good point.
Who is that? It's actually a Premier League person is a Tory MP.
Yeah.
And they couldn't vote on a Commons thing earlier in the week, could they? Because they were doing a
It was being a linesman at Barcelona.
Yeah.
But, I mean,
who knew?
So, I mean, Andy, so anyway, last night the game plan did seem to be to suck up the pressure and hit them on the break, and that's how the first goal came in the ninth minute.
Well, yeah, I actually can't remember the detail of the foul, but the...
I think Duncan brought the ball forward and got flattened.
But, again, the delivery from Gross is just exemplary. I mean the marking from West Ham for that was non-existent.
Shambles, wasn't
it? Absolutely non-existent. But the way that Gross just loops the ball into difficult places for defenders to defend, and Murray was just knew where it was going from the minute he struck it, and he just glided in. Hart was way over to the wrong side of the goal. It gave Murray half the net to head it in, and he I wouldn't say he buried it, he just nestled it neatly into the net.
Well, the thing is, one, he didn't have to jump for it.
No,
it was just a tiny little skip.
Glided.
Yeah, he was goal side of his man, and then there was a fellow, a West Ham player on the far side keeping everyone on the side. So, you know, that is Preston Park defending. But secondly, and we pointed this out when we saw the replay, because we were in the press box and you just get these kind of little sort of high definition screens, is that... I don't know. I'm not going to call it bent. I'm not sure what I can call it. But Hart didn't stick his arm out to try and... I'm not convinced he would have saved it, but he kept his arm crooked in.
He pulled it back.
He pulled it back. And you think, what's going on here? He didn't sort of, you know, put his arm out. Has he got an injury?
I think it was just a case of that he knew he was never going to get it.
He knew he wasn't going to get it. He was too out of position.
But I mean, I think this is zonal marking, which I'm not really a fan of.
Well, it's their problem, isn't it?
But it was, I mean, he was in about 4 yards of space. It was ridiculous. You cannot give Glenn Murray that amount of time and space in the penalty box.
Well, the mere fact
regardless of whether he's onside or not.
The mere fact is he got, you know, goal side of his man. I mean, his man just never picked him up. And it was, you know, for the fact it's a Premier League game, I'm not convinced he'll score an easier goal.
And it was also just a good indication that Murray was definitely fitter than he has been in recent mm-hmm. weeks, where he's basically been carrying the load at sort of like 70-80% of his capacity due to recent injuries, and the fact that he's the only forward that is available for selection at the moment.
Well, Hemed's back next time.
But you know,
Hemed,
I mean,
and Baldock.
Yeah, but he was, you know, but he was onside, or he was onside last night.
I don't think he was given offside once, was he?
No.
It was giving away an awful lot of fouls, but no, I don't think he was ever offside.
He learnt that rocket that Chris gave him at half-time on Sunday.
I'd like to think so, yeah.
Still seemed to have been working.
Well, I think he's a bit like Bob Booker, and as much as Bob Booker has worked under a lot of managers, I think that Glenn Murray has been rocketed by a lot of managers about offside. I mean, it's parallels there.
Mm. But I mean, after that, I mean, it was all hands to the deck, really. It was, and West Ham tried to find a way back into the game, and they did have an awful lot of possession, and they were trying to put balls into the box and testers. And Antonio, who we mentioned earlier, he was a constant menace when he wasn't being shot, it seemed, and going down way too easily. And just,
I don't think it was that bad, but.
Well, there was one instance, but.
Well, he ended up clattered off the pitch, didn't he? I think he must have landed awkwardly.
Yeah, he did land awkwardly, hit his ribs.
But every time they did find themselves in a decent scoring opportunity and position, there was someone there to block it. Or
usually the Duncan Duffy bomb.
Well, Bruno as well was getting in some blocks, and as was Bond.
Well, the point is, if you're going to throw in all these various crosses, one against Duncan Duffy, two without Andy Carroll, you are hiding to nothing. I mean, it was... I don't know if this was their kind of... If West Ham-Brighton, for West Ham fans, was the same as our Brighton against Walsall thing, where you're just trying the same
just
thing...
Just about to say
oh,
that.
Oh, sorry.
You nicked my line.
You know, just trying the same thing over and over again. And even when they did get their shots away, there out comes Duffy flying out, probably terrifying the person taking the shot.
He does like a diving header, doesn't he?
He does. I might say he's kind of... There's that... What's his name? Was it Keith Houchin?
The
diving header. There's a touch of that. I think that Snappy has got an awful lot of pictures of, well, Duffy horizontal, but about 3 feet off the ground.
But what was interesting is we seem to fall into a pattern of defending and like the shape of the defence that just seemed very comfortable, and we didn't really have to expend an enormous amount of energy. That's how I saw it anyway. We just kind of like positioned ourselves and said, right, get past us, knowing that they weren't good enough to get past us, and I think that played away. Played a part of the thought process of how we approached the game. I think if we were playing a team we regarded as more threatening, we may well have chosen to play in a different way. But we knew that we had their number.
How many
saves did Ryan actually have to make?
I think there was one shot straight at him, and that was it, wasn't it?
That's pretty much it. I mean, the ball.
There was a shot that went just wide that I think he was scrambling for. In the first half,
it was
decent shot across the thing that went about a foot wide of the post, but that was about it.
There was a lot of huff and puff from West Ham. I mean, we made them work quite hard with the ball. They had to run around quite a bit. They had to look for the spaces to put the ball in, and normally they couldn't see a gap or anything like that, so they'd have to come back, think again. Yeah. They kept doing it, kept going out for corners. The corners were just dealt with comfortably all the time. I mean, it was. We just figured out a way of playing, and it was good enough against that opposition.
There's a couple of additions to that. One's with a caveat, but what the additional thing is that after a while we got to realise, I think this might have been deliberate on Chris Hughton's part, is that West Ham weren't just playing against us, they were playing against their fans, because it wasn't long before their fans were getting sort of on their backs a bit, and the moaning and the booing and what have you. But what I would say is, as a caveat to all that, and it's certainly after we scored the goal, the first goal, was that yes, we were defending them, they weren't getting past us and what have you, but what I felt frustrated about, and I thought that we could have done better with this, with a little bit more movement, a little bit more consideration, was our ball retention, certainly for the sort of second half, the first half, was pretty shocking. I mean, we were sort of chasing ourselves down blind alleys. Glenn Murray was having to feed on scraps. When he did get it, he would then give it away a bit cheaply. There was actually too much of the ball being given away cheaply, and you think, well, all right, we can say this smugly afterwards, with a nice, healthy 3-0 defeat where West Ham just haven't come to the party. But at the time you think, well, actually, if West Ham do buck their ideas up here, we're going to get a roasting because we can't keep the ball. Mm. I mean, if we play
like that against someone like Man United, we're going to get
stuffed. We're going to get horribly, horribly stuffed. I mean, we're going to go play Man United, and we know we're not going to get anything out of it. All we want to do is stop embarrassing. Yeah. Dream on. But we're going to get, you know, as long as we save embarrassment. Like when we came away from the Arsenal game, yeah, we lost 2-0, but we were kind of buoyed by the fact that we weren't absolutely, you know, bossed by it. But West Ham was shockingly poor, and yet at times we were still playing poorly against them.
I think we recognised. I mean, I'm just going to give Hughton credit. I just think he knew what West Ham had to offer. He knew what we had to do to counter it and get the result. And the job was done, and to be honest, relatively comfortably. Mm. I mean,
that now afterwards, though.
No, I mean, I am normally a very nervous watcher of football. I mean, I normally get very anxious, like the last 10 minutes. I can just see...
You can't see on the Albion Raw.
See goals coming in from all angles into our net. And it was comfortable. Really, I thought 2-0, seriously. I mean, we're not getting beaten, you know, big by good teams, let alone we're going to let this team get two goals against us.
Okay, another West Ham attack breakdown. Dale Stevens brought it clear, and he put it on a plate for Glenn Murray to make it 2, only Joe Hart made a great save.
Yeah, and it was a good move. I think it was just after the board went up to say, you know, a number of added minutes. And I think this happened in both the halves, is that the board went up and West Ham stopped playing. Certainly after we scored the third goal, West Ham stopped playing for a bit. And we had two very good chances, one of which went in. Yes, it was a decent save, but it was a good move in the first place. And that's what you're heartened about.
Yeah,
and that's what you want to see.
But so the warning signs were there going into injury time at the end of the first half that we were going to try and get another goal.
Flourish, absolutely.
And the ball fell to Jose Escuerdo on the left-hand side of the box, and he took on a couple of defenders, got to the edge of the box, and curled a shot past Hart. Now, I'm still saying Hart should have saved it. Andy, you're saying there's too much power in the shot and Hart didn't stand a chance.
Well, I'm not saying he didn't stand a chance, but I don't think he was close enough. He did get his hand to it, but I don't think it was a full hand. I think it was the top of his hand. The ball just went
past. It was that hard a shot.
The ball just went past him. Yeah. I mean, he was at full stretch, and the ball was just put in a place that was difficult for him to save. I mean, I know the radio were saying that Joe Hart, it was a howler from Joe Hart. I really disagree with that. I mean, he'll no doubt think he could have saved it, but I think it was just a really good shot. It was put in a place that was difficult for the keeper to save, and yeah, he got a part of it. You know, he did get a hand to it, but just not enough.
But if we thought that Joe Hart
and you know, credit to Izquierdo for putting it in the net in such a...
Absolutely, you've got to make the keeper make a save, exactly. And he didn't, and it went in. You know, it's as simple as it was a shot on target.
So again, this is another example of, like, Joe Hart made a mistake. But no, actually, it was a great goal by a Brighton player.
But I would say this, whereas if there's anyone that finds any mirth and hilarity in Joe Hart, possibly, you know, depends on your point of view, making a mistake, that was as of nothing compared to the celebration afterwards when Izquierdo is running towards the camera. He does a perfect knee slide. Knockhart tries to do the same instead and ends up planting his face into the pitch.
We have put this out on our Twitter page and on our Facebook page. I think
it was on Seagulls Over London that we retweeted. If you get a chance to see it on our Twitter page, it is wet your pants.
Someone has put this into a GIF now. And,
It's hilarious.
It is absolutely brilliant.
He just disappears out of shot.
He actually ends up tumbling behind Izquierdo, and yeah, I mean, he's got a face full of pitch there on the back of that. What it was, he did a knee slide. He didn't slide. He caught his knees in and went splat straight into the turf. It's the sort of thing you expect a toddler to do. It was that funny.
Yeah. Okay. Well, second half then, we're going with a 2-0 lead at half-time, which was...
It was unexpected.
And we kept... Izquierdo got caught out trying to be clever in his own box and nearly go.
The thing is, it's a pattern through the whole game that when we're on the ball, it's the decision-making. Sometimes I couldn't help thinking, yes, it's good to keep the ball, but there was too much at the times I felt keeping the ball for the sake of keeping the ball rather than actually using it. So we were actually almost falling into the trap that West Ham were. There were times when a ball could have been played forward and the uber safely one was coming backwards. Mm. You know, when they found the space, fine, they used it and used it reasonably well, but sometimes the quality and decision making, you know, that's something that hopefully will improve. You know, for the Everton game and the West Ham game as a whole, off the ball defending, we were amazing. On the ball, we need to up our game. I still feel
okay. Well, there was there's more opportunities for us to add to our tally of goals. One of them was Knockhart, who was a bit quiet most of the night. To be fair,
you reckon he's carrying some weight?
He does look like he's carrying a little bit of timber. Yeah.
What do you reckon, Andy?
I don't think he's fit. I think he's been a yard or two off what he was last season.
Right. I think it's one or two sort of demons that are sort of yet to escape.
I think, he's given some interviews recently and there's been some articles about him. I think now there's a little bit of distance between, it's COD psychology, but maybe the loss of his father is now that the impact of that is now finally sinking in. But he seems to be playing his way back out of that mini slump bit by bit. And the thing is that because other players have stepped up, they're able to sort of help him on that journey, because like March has been absolutely outstanding. Stevens and Proper and Gross. I mean, other players have all stepped up. So, okay, Anthony, who we relied on a lot last season, is not the huge impact for us this season. But the rest of the team's picking up the slack.
I was about to say, has Knockhart regressed, or have the others just improved?
Well, I think Knockhart's out of form. I mean, he showed last night. I mean, the point I was going to make here was where he danced through the West Ham defence.
Well, they'd stopped playing by then as well, which.
But I mean, that was the Knockhart of last season, who we haven't seen an awful lot of stuff thus far this season.
I think the Knockhart of old is on his way back. But he's still got a way to go yet.
Okay.
But I mean, it was.
But he did set up Murray beautifully,
yes,
there,
did.
Didn't he? I mean, I was expecting a shot. You could see he was revving up for a shot, and then there's Murray. Now, we're sitting in the press box. We were sitting behind Ben Roberts and a couple of sort of stats. They've got these banks of computers in the press area, and they're doing all these various stats and percentages and, you know, throwing numbers up in the air and see how they land. And you think, God, you can't get into the football because you're just looking at these computers about, that was a 21% pass, and that was a 3 out of 7 overhead. And you think, you sad people. But when Murray was then sort of through into the 6-yard box, and I think the ball was really screaming to be cut back or cut across for whoever was on the back post, and he tried to get past Hart, all three went up heading, you know, was it face palming? Why didn't you cross it? And you think, okay, anyone listening here, I will tell you this, Ben Roberts, good God, does he get into a game. I mean, he's sitting up in the thing, watching the whole thing. He had nothing to do, probably, to think about how Matt Ryan could have improved his game. Forget it, no chance. He didn't have anything to do. But wow, they really get into the whole game. They, you know,
yeah. And okay, well, it was shortly after that that Bruno crosses to Glenn Murray, who tries to cut inside. Zappaletta,
yeah.
Who decided to bring him down, and the refs pointed to the spot, and Murray puts it straight down the centre for a 3-0 victory.
Yeah, the number of West Ham fans we were talking to, and by the way, sorry, I do have to say this, the amount of homophobia I heard up there, it really was a bit unedifying, not good form at all. But yes, he made a little bit of a meal of it, but it was clearly a foul, so I don't think anyone's going to complain about that too much.
Well, Andy and myself watched it while we were waiting for you to turn up today, Al, but
as quick as I could.
But it doesn't look like he made as much of a meal of it as we first
Well, his hands went up a bit as if to
no,
say...
No, his knee was right in there.
Yeah.
But, okay, so that capped a brilliant night in London, and we've been asking you for your favourite games in London, your
well,
London
Andy's Orchard. Got a lot to go through.
Well, Andy made a very, very, very good point on this.
Which
and
is?
He said, there's lots to choose from, but I'm hoping we'll have another one to talk about on Friday night. And you were right, Andy.
Yeah, I went to a great game yesterday in London. It was brilliant. But, let's talk about it.
Yeah. But, yeah, as if we haven't already.
But we did get quite a lot of response
on this.
I
was just thinking, when you're talking about, what specifically talking about was Brighton away games in the capital. Obviously, you've crossed the river, as it were, from Barnet to West Ham to Brighton. So, you know, but what we're specifically talking about is Brighton in London. Yeah. So, which incidentally nowadays doesn't involve Malbec, does it?
No, it doesn't.
Not at the moment, but it might make a reappearance at some point, I'd imagine.
I really am hoping Necoil is the new elixir of away day victories.
That was a fine tipple. But yeah. We'll start with Tim Herbert. Hi, Tim, how are you? He says too many, Al, but
thanks, Tim.
But the 4-0 away at Charlton will stick in the memory for a long time because of the immense football we played that day and the away support.
Absolutely. No, that was great. It was the same day that Millwall played Palace at Smellhurst, and Millwall won 1-0. I remember having a couple of jars in, I think it was the George, just near London Bridge afterwards, and talking to Millwall fans, and they were just, one, smug that they beat Palace. Grid, great, hooray. Secondly, they were just sort of genuinely interested about the stadium, which was obviously upcoming at the time. So yeah, that was a damn fine day out.
Yeah. Rob Baker also mentions that 4-0 at Charlton. Quite a few people have mentioned our recent
away at QPR.
Mark Johnson, what can you tell us about away games at QPR?
No, what's happened is that Mark Johnson, who's got the show coming up next on Reverb here, Slipstream Worldwide Beats, is a QPR fan. I think he's quietly pleased for the way that the Albion are progressing. But he's fantastic, he said there. But yeah, but I think still his heart lies with QPR. Yeah. So,
but quite a few people have also mentioned our last three visits to Craven Cottage have been resounding successes.
Yes, got very good form there. Is it 2-1 in each case, or was it, no? 2-0 was the first one, wasn't it? It was under Nathan Jones.
Yeah, that was Solly March's first goal for us, and a goal from Adrian Kalunga as well in that game.
Blimey, that's a collector's item.
It is a bit, isn't it? And then the next one was, that would have been Baldock and Hemed from the penalty spot. That was another nice day out. A few beers on the Thames and, you know.
Cracking goal from Baldock as well.
Absolutely. And then sort of last time where you were convinced that the Putney End was going to collapse.
Mm. And quite a few people have mentioned away games at Orient, which have always been good fun. There's a brilliant comment on here from someone called Andy Bass.
Who's it?
No idea. Okay. He says the 4-1 at Orient on a midweek evening. We were desperate for the points, and it was a much needed win at the time. Yes. Also notable for the fact that we could watch a TV in one of the flats to our left. I believe Silent Witness was on. Good show.
It was hilarious because, I mean, obviously...
Those flats at Orient are weird, aren't they?
The listeners who went to all these games at Orient... I mean, Orient was a great away day back in the day, and they put all these flats in, and you could... There was this...
I've seen a lot more than silent witness in those flats.
I mean, the game started as poor, then you could watch the TV.
Or pretty women doing their ironing.
Yeah, and I believe the tenant of that actually went out for a pint. I think she's gone out for a pint of milk. and she came back with a pint of milk. It was brilliant. It was just so funny. Yeah. And it was just like a little bit of reality TV.
We
are running out of time, so we're going to go through this.
And we won 4-1. That's a Savage score, didn't
he? Did.
But there was also the one, another game at Orient in Paul Brooker and Bobby scored a 2-1 win.
2-0 win, yeah. That was superb, that was. Yeah. Scenes, on the terrace then, weren't they?
Scenes that day. Yeah. Absolutely. Yes, fantastic.
David R. Williams, very, very notable game, this one. I remember it very, very well, probably for the fact that the Millwall fans knocked the policeman's helmet off, stuffed it with paper and set it on fire after their 2-1 defeat in the playoff game at the Old Den. David Williams, he says, Millwall away in 91 was a very memorable game, having a 4-1 lead from the first leg at the Goulston. And when they scored first at the intimidating Old Den, they had their tails up, but we turned it around. It was a great game. John Robinson and Robert Codner?
Bob Codner, yeah. I think it was Bob. Yes, I think it was. And Beanie ran the Millwall.
Nick Trepanic, another game at Millwall, 1-0 win. He said a 1-0 win at Spurs in the old First Division, but for him, his favourite, the 83 Cup semi-final at Highbury.
Fair enough. Are we also going to talk about the game at the Den, where we started mocking pink shirts?
Oh, that was a great day.
That's it. Warren Hatter, he's mentioned that one.
Oh, okay.
Was it Butters or Carpenter that got sent off?
Carpenter, flying in with a red card.
Another memorable game at Upton Park, this one, with Butters 1-0 win.
Absolutely.
And Adam Virgo. Hi, Adam.
Got sent off.
Yeah, I think also, do you remember that game? I think it was Lingard's debut for us, and he got flattened by Danny Shittu, and we scored the penalty, and it was probably the worst 1-0 win I've ever seen.
That was really rubbish.
That was terrible.
But it was, long may these, we've got a few more trips to, in
well,
London coming
Brentford
up
this season. Brentford 3-3 last year was pretty mad as well.
That was great. And Chris O'Grady scoring at Brentford as well. Yeah. I remember the first time, it was a rubbish game. We won 1-0 at Brentford. It was the first time we won there ever, I think, after the last few visits they're losing 4-0.
Is this part of the run of eight? Because we won 1-0.
Oh, yeah, that was from the rebound on the penalty.
Yeah. But that is it. And keep those memories coming. This has been the Albion Roar. That has been Andy Bass. That is Alan Wears. I'm AD Packham, and we'll see you again next week. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Error, but I have no fear, 'cause London is drowning out.